Charles, do you think habits are good and habits are bad?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There was a study done by a Duke University professor a couple of years ago, and what she discovered is that about 40 to 45% of the daily behaviors that we make each day are habits. Most of them are good, right? When you back a car out of a driveway, that kind of happens. The first couple times it happens, you have to think really hard about it. But then it just becomes a habit. You're able to concentrate on other things while doing it. The way that you decide to eat most of the time is habitual. How you talk to your kids. The brain doesn't distinguish between bad habits and good habits. It just knows that there are habits, and it forms them. And it's up to us to decide how to create good ones and stop bad ones.
Well, see, now that is the $64,000 question. If we get into habits, generally we think they're okay, and maybe they're not. So how do we distinguish what's good and what's bad?
Well, I think most people know automatically whether a habit is good or bad, right? It's whether it's something that they're happy that they do automatically or something that they just do, you know, that they wish that they didn't. What we've learned in the last decade is that and we've learned an enormous amount about how habits work, particularly from neurology laboratories. And basically what we've learned from that is that every habit has three components. There's a cue, which is like a trigger for the habit to start in the first place. And then a routine, which is the behavior itself. And then finally a reward. And the reward is how your brain decides whether to store that pattern for the future or not. And by understanding and examining and diagnosing the cues and rewards that cause habits, that's how we can change them. Most people just focus on the behavior itself, but it's the cue and the reward that really is the secret to changing a habit.
You looked at a major retailing company and wrote about this in the New York Times Magazine about habits. Tell me about this.
So we looked at Target. You know, someone had told me that Target is very, very sophisticated about studying consumers' habits. And so I started looking into this, and what I discovered is that that's exactly right. Target studies shoppers' habits, and one of the reasons why they do is they want to identify when people are going through these major life moments, when their shopping habits are up for grabs. In particular, one of the things that Target wants to know is when women are pregnant, because they know that when someone's about to have a baby, all of a sudden, all of their shopping habits become very flexible. And if they can identify when that's happening, they can get the right coupons into women's hands at the right time. So as a result, by looking at a number of shopping habits while people are inside the stores, they're able to figure out who is pregnant, even if that woman, for instance, hasn't told Target they're pregnant, even if they haven't told their parents yet that they're pregnant. Target can determine their pregnancy by watching their shopping habits and then get the right get coupons into their hands.
8-time Olympic gold medal winner Michael Phelps. Tell us a little bit about him, his struggles, and his habits.
Well, one of the things that's really interesting about Phelps, and I spoke extensively to his coach, is that a lot of Phelps' training is built around forming the right habits. In particular, we know that some habits matter more than others. These are called keystone habits because they seem to set off a chain reaction that echoes through a person's life and makes other habits more flexible, makes them easier to change. Exercise for a lot of people is a keystone habit. We found that when people start exercising habitually, they start eating better. Their food habits change, which makes sense, right? Because you're exercising, you're feeling good. But what's interesting is that people who start exercising habitually, they also start using their credit cards less, which makes less sense. But it's because for a lot of people, exercise is a keystone habit. For Michael Phelps, a lot of his training is built around keystone habits, forming the right habits every single day that give him a sense of victory, what's known as the science of small wins. And so a lot of his training is designed so that every day, particularly on a race day, he always eats the same thing. He trains the exact same way. He listens to the same hip-hop mix before the race. Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to create this gradual sense of small victories, small wins throughout a day.
That's
so by the time he gets to the actual race itself and he swims and he wins, it feels like just one more small win, small victory in a day, in a year, in a life full of other successes.
Tell me about the parents and children. You talk about how if you sign a child up for, let's say, soccer at a young age, that you may be able to create someone who studies well.
That's right. We know that for kids in particular, one of the biggest keystone habits is is willpower habits, is taking kids and training them how to have willpower. And one of the most successful ways of doing this is to enroll them or to structure their days so that they learn how to develop self-discipline. That's one of the reasons that, you know, a psychologist named Todd Heatherton, when I spoke to him, what he said is, that's why you sign kids up for soccer when they're 5 years old, or you sign them up for piano lessons. It's not because you think that they're going to become a soccer expert or a professional pianist. It's because a kid who learns how to make themselves go to practice, a kid who learns how to make themselves sit down and do their scales or run after the ball when they're 5 or 6 years old, that's a kid who's learning willpower habits. And 10 years later, when they're in high school, those are kids who are doing their homework earlier.
Tell us about the Claude Hopkins. What a great story this is.
So Claude Hopkins was a marketer who, about 100 years ago, found a toothpaste named Pepsodent. And at the time, very few Americans actually brushed their teeth. It was something that was really reserved for the upper classes for the most part. And the reason why most people didn't brush their teeth is because they didn't see any need to. And so toothpaste wasn't particularly popular. And so Hopkins, as a marketing man, decided that he wanted to start a daily habit of getting Americans to brush their teeth. So what he, as I mentioned before, there's a cue to every habit and a reward. And he started by looking at the cue. And what he discovered was, you know, the film that forms on people's teeth. In fact, you know, for years, eons really, people had that film on their teeth and it had never bothered them. But he knew that people would notice this film, and so he made that into a daily cue. And he put up posters all around America that said, "Do you feel that film on your teeth? That means that you need to brush them." But then he also needed a reward. And so the Pepsodent toothpaste recipe contained chemicals that were designed to make people's gums and tongue tingle. And the reason why is because he knew that once people got used to that tingling, once they equated it with cleanliness, that would be a reward that caused them to form a habit. And that's, in fact, exactly what happened. 5 years after Claude Hopkins started advertising Pepsodent, half of America was brushing their teeth.
And I remember the commercial when I was a kid. It was so catchy. Do you remember that, Charles?
I think I'm a little bit too young to have seen it.
Don't force me to sing it now. I don't want to do that, but it goes, you know, you got to brush your teeth with Pepsodent. But it was really, really catchy. And, you know, it was one of the few commercials devoted to brushing your teeth that I think I'll ever remember in my life. And so marketers probably understand the power of habit as well, don't they?
Very much so. Very much so. And in fact, I mean, I think what's interesting about that example is that, you know, even today, every toothpaste contains chemicals that are put in there to make your gums and tongue tingle. And the reason why is because they know that once people become used to that tingling, then when they're laying in bed or when they're walking out the door in the morning, if they don't feel that tingling, then it's a signal to them that they need to brush their teeth.